How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Welcome to the fifth Rain and Jays podcast. I'm John Corrales, joined by Jay King, deep in the cellar of the King family compound, somewhere in western Massachusetts.
Yes. Yes, I am at my family's house today, my parents' house. Happy to go check out the little brother's basketball game this afternoon. He dominated, too, so I've got to put that out there.
Let's just do dominant. A podcast about your brother's basketball game. Let's just do it. Forget the Celtics.
Yeah,
Nothing's happening with them anyway.
Nothing at all, especially not a 20-point victory against the Washington Wizards.
Yes. And, of course, after I tweet out, I'm afraid of what's going to happen tonight because you have to start Isaiah Thomas, not Marcus Smart, against that Wizards backcourt. And I'm sitting there, you know, soiling myself, worrying about this game, and they go out and crush. Although, it didn't start out. It didn't start out that way. Brad Stevens called, like, that first time out a minute and a half into the game or so. And
yep.
Whatever he said, just write it down, say it before every game. Whatever it was, it worked. It got Jared Sullinger to play maybe the best game of his career as a Celtic. At least that first quarter was the best stretch of a 12-minute stretch I've seen him play.
Yeah, and we're now five games in. And he's kind of been like that the whole time. Like, this might be the best 5-game stretch of his career.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's not, it's close. He's shooting efficiently. He's rebounding. He's playing, by Stevens's account, the best defense he's ever played. And, I mean, some of those outlet passes he made last night, including the one from his butt.
Yeah.
To Isaiah Thomas. Those were some of the most beautiful outlet passes you'll see. He is just playing great basketball, and it's come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Because all preseason, everyone counted him out. Everyone thought he was going to be the last guy in the rotation.
Right.
It took him 3 games to become a starter, and now he's like the best big man ever.
Right. This is if the preseason had never happened,
yeah,
we just went into this. We wouldn't be in such awe of Jared Sullinger. We would just be like, Sully's taking the next step. I think that would be the conversation. We'd sit there and be like, look, he was 13-8 for the past 2 seasons. And now look at him. He's rounding out his game a little bit. He's hitting shots. He's hitting more shots. He's playing well. Like you said, he's playing better defense. And we'd just be sitting there saying, wow, Sully's taking that next step. He's a fourth-year player that's taking the next step. And but because this preseason we were in this crazy, well, he's on the outside looking in, immediately, boom. And you know, here's the funny thing. If Kelly Olynyk had never ripped Kevin Love's arm out of its socket, would Jared Sullinger be doing what he's doing? Because the reason Sully played in game one is because Kelly Olynyk was suspended. And then he came out and he had a great game, and it just – Stevens saw it and he had to, you know, keep riding it and keep letting him play. And now he's cemented himself as much as you can cement yourself on this team in the rotation. He's clearly got to be part of the rotation now. Rather than being the fifth of five bigs, he's the first of five bigs. But I just think it's funny that if Kelly Olynyk wasn't suspended for the first game, what the trajectory would be right now, where would Sullinger be?
Yeah. Or even if Jahlil Okafor didn't go wild in the first 6 minutes, forcing Sullinger to get called into action immediately to defend him. And, I mean, at some point, if he was going to play this well, he was going to force his way into the rotation. But he did it on night one and has not slowed down since. His true shooting percentage right now is 61.3, which would blow his career high out of the water. He won't continue that for the whole season.
Come on.
But but he does seem like he's just in a groove right there. And he does seem like, after all that talk about John Lucas, after all that talk about his summer away, he came back looking kind of the same.
Yeah.
But on the court, he seems like he's in better shape. He does look to be more active out there, and all good signs from Solinger so far. He's one of the real bright mark. And I mean, he's 23. Like,
right.
Like, we should have expected him to take a step forward this year, but he plateaued last year. Like, he didn't take the step forward last year we anticipated. And now maybe finally he's doing that. I mean, he's just had a great, great five games so far.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's funny because you look at his numbers. He's only averaging 11 points a game, which is down a little bit. But when you look at the advanced numbers,
they're all
ridiculous.
Better.
Every single metric is basically better. His rebounding percentage is better. Everything is better. His player efficiency rating right now is 24.9.
Yeah, I mean, and that's like star
that's,
level.
Yes, that's star quality stuff.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's just an amazing thing. And now this brings up an entirely new question about these rotations, because we were talking about this in previous episodes. Injuries are going to happen. The injury happened almost immediately. Marcus Smart with the mystery turf toe something or other thing. And now we start Isaiah Thomas. And you have not just a tinkering of these starting lineups. We now have a wholesale change. Everything that we were working towards, all of the words that we spoke, the words that we've written, all out the window. Burn them, throw my laptop away, just start completely over. Because now, all of a sudden, we have starting lineups with Isaiah Thomas and Amir Johnson and Jared Sullinger in there, which, well, if you put money on, how much money would you have put on that happening by this time? I wouldn't have touched that bet at all.
Like, never.
Never. So now we have to sit here and talk about, what kind of rotations are we going to have here? Marcus Smart's going to be coming back soon. I assume that he goes back into the starting lineup.
Yeah.
And then Isaiah Thomas, we always, as much as we, as other guys play extremely well, the conversation always shifts back to, will Isaiah Thomas be a starter? And you had a tweet today about, you know, this sounds weird, but I don't think last night was proof that Isaiah Thomas should be starting. Now, let's look at that for a second, because Isaiah Thomas did not shoot well last night. He was 5 of 15. So the heroes of the game were Jared Sullinger, Kelly Olynyk, and, by God, Evan Turner.
There you go. Admit it, John.
No.
Admit it.
I will not. I'm not gonna crap all over Turner for a good game. He played a very good game. What am I gonna say? But that's Evan Turner. Like, he'll
that's two straight, by the way. Two straight.
Yeah. I can't say anything about it. But then he'll go out and have like a real stinker too. It feel like it's all or nothing. He's never just okay. He's either, wow, Evan Turner played great, or I can't believe how bad Evan Turner is on the floor. Like, it's one of those two things. But hey, he's playing well, and there's a way to use him to have him continue to play well. So Marcus Smart comes back. Do you go back to the Smart Bradley combo, or do you have Isaiah Thomas come in there with Smart and you move Bradley to the bench? If you want to tinker with things a little bit, maybe you start Smart, Thomas, Amir Johnson, Jared Sullinger, and Jay Crowder.
Yeah, I think, to me, as well as the Celtics played in their route of the Wizards, that was almost, not that it was proof that Thomas should come off the bench, But he played the whole first quarter of that game. And Solinger carried the first however many minutes. And then Thomas was at his best at the end of the first quarter when he was out there with the second unit, which was Jonas Jerebko, Kelly Olynyk, Jay Crowder. I forget who the other guy was. And then Thomas. And, I mean, he just completely took advantage of Ramon Sessions. Completely took advantage of all the space that that small lineup gave him. And I think that's when he's at his best. And to maximize his minutes, I still think you do that. Now, no matter what, when he's on the court, the Celtics are going to be a better team. Like, they just score better. They look better. They're more fun. They're dynamic. They're going to be better with him on the court. But starting, coming off the bench, it's all about maximizing his minutes. And I still think I think this. I'm not even sure I think this. But I think that he should continue coming off the bench and see if starting Jared Solinger and Amir Johnson rather than David Lee and Tyler Zeller is enough to give that first unit the real kick. I thought the real difference in the game against the Wizards, and it started in the second half against the Indiana Pacers, Stevens is going small.
Yep.
He has recommitted to small lineups that were really what made the Celtics good last year. He's completely benched Tyler Zeller. Like, Tyler Zeller isn't even a thought anymore. And if you look at him on the bench, the poor guy looks sad. Like, he really does.
He is.
He's known as a great teammate. He's known as the type of guy who will handle it very well if he continues to play limited minutes. But, I mean, he goes from being a starter to now he's in a contract year. His minutes are dwindling by the day. He's playing garbage time with the rookies. It's tough for him. But
yeah.
More importantly, Stevens is back to the small lineups, which I think is really the way the Celtics are good. And it didn't take him long because he's a very good coach. And he decided, you know what, it doesn't matter that we have five established bigs. It doesn't matter that front court depth was hailed as like the thing that we did best. He's like, you know what? Screw it. We're going back to Jonas Jerebko at power forward. And that's what makes us better. That's what makes us good. And we also have to talk about Kelly Olynyk, because if he continues to be as good as he was against the Wizards and just that active, like, he was so active. He was making plays every time he touched the ball. He's a ridiculously skilled 7-footer.
Yeah.
He has gotten himself in great shape to where now he can really damage guys, I think, with his shape. He missed a lot of shots in the first four games. I like the way he's been playing all season. Like, even though he's missed shots, he's played well, I thought. I think he looks far more comfortable out there. He's not hesitating like he used to.
Yep.
And if he can do that, he gives you size. He's a 7-footer. And he also spreads the court for Isaiah Thomas, Evan Turner, Marcus Smart, whoever else you have as a ball handler in your unit. So I think he's huge to their team. If he plays well, that changes things. And that allows them to have a lot of flexibility because of his offensive skill set.
Yeah, and I should mention one of our Twitter questions, which came from Aaron, was what's the deal with what happened to Tyler Zeller? Is he done with the team now? I want to make sure that we get that into this conversation. It's funny. Yes, for now. I think the answer right there, just to go back, yes, for now. But as soon as we say he's done, he's going to get a chance to play, and he's going to go out and have a great game, and something's going to happen. Because that's how things are going with the Celtics this year. Something's going to happen. David Lee's going to get sick, and Tyler Zeller's going to come in, or somebody's going to suck, and Tyler Zeller's going to come in, and he's going to pick and roll, get to the hoop four times, and have like a 15-point, 10-rebound game. And people are going to say, oh, wow, you got to play him some more too. So right now, I agree that it's best without Zeller on the floor. It's best when you have Jerebko in and when you have Kelly Olynyk in, because they just change how the team is defended. You can't come off of those guys. And that just completely changes the dynamic of that unit on the floor, whoever's with them. That's why, going back to the Isaiah Thomas thing, that's why Isaiah Thomas is so effective when he's being used. And part of my response to your tweet about everything, starting Isaiah Thomas, it's not just about start Isaiah Thomas and that's it, because he's your best player. And one of the tweets I got back was, how many teams don't start their best player? Well, fine. But yeah. It's not as simple as that. It's not a black and white issue.
Yeah, and how many teams have a 5'9" scorer as their best player? Like, there's a real.
It's not Kevin Durant coming off the bench.
Yeah,
you know, it's there are limitations, and we saw at when he was starting those games that he started, like Indiana, I thought missed a lot of chances to even posting up Monte Ellis, which they did a little bit. Pick and rolls. They finally, about halfway through the first quarter in that Indy game, they started running pick and rolls with Paul George. And the Celtics, that's when that huge lead started to build. You can't have Isaiah Thomas out there in those situations. But beyond that, the rotations, you need other guys on the floor with Isaiah Thomas. He's not just a scorer. He's not just going to go out there and drop 20 for you on any given night. He's going to drop 20, 25, 27 when you have the right combinations on the floor, when you have Jareb Cohen and Olynyk out there spacing things, and when you have Amir Johnson setting him the picks and whatever, and you have all of these different dynamics coming together at the same time. That's when he's at his best. And when he's taking advantage of second unit defenses, that's when he's at his best. That's when he gets going. And then at the end of games, he's on such a roll, you can't stop him. But it's not just about starting Thomas. It's about all of these guys playing together and fitting. It's a puzzle. And this is why Sullinger is working. This is why Sullinger working has such an effect on the rest of the team, because it changes the way the entire team is defended. And so I think that bringing it back to the Kelly Olynyk conversation, Olynyk playing like he did is hugely important. And Olynyk playing like he did off of the bench, which is where he's going to be, is coming off the bench, is going to be immensely important, because he is going to open things up for Isaiah Thomas. So in a weird way, I think we're starting to see a little bit of the future of this team.
Yeah.
I think we're starting to see how these rotations are going to start shaking out a little bit, minus the odd games where you're going to have to throw a bigger guy out there like Zeller. But I think Zeller is mostly going to be relegated to the bench. And it's Sully has now leapfrogged him. And you're going to start seeing I like the idea of putting Sully in the starting lineup. The question is Amir Johnson now. Do you start Johnson? Because I feel like Johnson's in a position where you have to maximize his minutes, just like you have to maximize Isaiah Thomas's minutes, because Johnson has some injury concerns, more nagging type stuff. And I don't want to burn his minutes the wrong way, because he's so important with Isaiah Thomas. So this is the missing piece to the puzzle now. If you start Johnson, then how do those rotations go? Do you start Johnson and Sully and then bring in Jarebko and Olynyk, and then you just keep Johnson in there for a little bit, and then you just kind of
– Yeah.
You know, do you try – do you kind of like bring Johnson out and bring Sully back in? Or I think that's kind of what the next step of figuring things out will be.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's going to be a lot of discussion about who plays with who and how these rotations work out, because there's not a lot of separation from top to bottom on the roster. I mean, obviously Sullinger was like fifth big man 2 weeks ago, and now he's been great.
Right.
So to me, Amir Johnson, he just works. Whenever he's on the court, he does something that helps everybody else. Like, if he's out there with David Lee, he can space the floor and hide some of Lee's defensive deficiencies. If he's out there with Isaiah Thomas, same thing. If he's out there with Sullinger, like he's one of the quicker big men, so he can rotate and help when Sullinger can't. Like he's a type of glue guy that kind of fits with everybody. So I think, to me, it's don't overthink it. Like Amir Johnson, I also think he'll be great with the starting lineup because, and if Smart's back in the starting lineup, if you get Bradley, Smart, Crowder, and Johnson,
yeah,
like that's as tough as they get defensively for four man,
sure,
quartet, whatever you want to call it.
Plus Sullinger, who's playing great defense right now.
I don't know if I'd call it great. Well, it's improved.
Great for him. I mean,
great for him. He's definitely been better as a defender. We'll give him that. And I think he's kind of underrated as a defender because he's not athletic, because he doesn't. But he's a smart basketball player. When he's not launching ill-advised threes, he's a smart basketball player. Like everything else he does on the court, he's aware. And now he seems to be in a little better shape. He seems to be playing better defense. One question I have for you, what have been your thoughts about David Lee's play so far?
You know, it's so funny that you asked me that because I was just going to bring up David Lee. He's been okay. Something feels a little off with him. I don't know. I think he is either uncomfortable or – does he look uncomfortable to you? He looks a little uncomfortable to me.
Yeah, yeah. I would say not. I mean, he looks almost out of shape, like old. Like, he doesn't look good out there. He hasn't been finishing particularly well, except with the Pacers game. And his thing is, if he's not being a real threat in the pick and roll, if he's not a very good offensive player, he's not a good player because defensively he has so many limitations. And he's not going to space the court. He's not going to do a lot of anything else. So he has to be very good in that finishing and facilitating role. I haven't seen it yet from him. And I think he's been a disappointment. One of the real disappointments for me this season. I don't know whether I would give Zeller his minutes. I don't know what I would do with him. But to me, the Celtics are best when they can space the floor and share the ball. And he just doesn't space the floor, and he doesn't give a lot of defensive impact. To me, he's been, so far, I would say the biggest disappointment, because they did have hopes that he would kind of jolt the offense a little bit with that first unit. That didn't happen. They had, you know, and I don't know what I would do. Again, we've talked about this before. He's 32 years old. He's in the last year of his contract. Tyler Zeller's a young guy who was pretty good last year. Like, mm-hmm. do you give Lee those minutes? Continue? And then if you don't, like, if you shift it around and Lee's all of a sudden on the bench, do you lose him? Because he was okay riding the pine for a championship team, but like all of a sudden you're riding the pine for a team that's 2-3 and maybe going to be just a bit better than 500. Like, that's a tough thing to ask of a veteran.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's just so many dynamics to a lot of these minutes decisions from Stevens, and that's one of them. And I don't know if David Lee is kind of on the downside of his career, but he didn't play any minutes. Like, he was behind Maurice Spates, and that Warriors team didn't flourish until he got put on the bench. And, like, He's always been good, but if he's not helping your offense, he's hurting you.
Right.
And right now he hasn't helped the offense enough.
Well, look, we've been talking about before, just in organically going back to the conversation earlier, we didn't talk about David Lee when we were talking about the rotations. We were talking about Jarebko. Like, that's who's getting his minutes, I think. It's Jarebko. And because Jarebko is a four who can hit the three. That's what you want. You got Jarebko and Olynyk on the floor together. They're spacing. That's it. Like, if you got Sullinger and Amir Johnson, that they're, you know, Sully can space, and Johnson's obviously a tough defender and great with the pick and roll. But there's no I don't see where Lee fits. And, you know, earlier in the before the preseason started, that was one thing that I was wondering about David Lee. Like, he just all of the same things that you're talking about now. A lot of us had these same concerns in July and August. You know, it's nice that they traded for Lee and they got out of the Gerald Wallace contract a year early. And so that it made sense financially. Like, I can see why they did the deal. But I'm perfectly fine with David Lee just kind of fading away. And if that means that he requests a trade, then you trade him. And if you get a second round pick for him, fine, whatever. Whatever happens to David Lee, it doesn't bother me one bit. And if he comes in and he plays well and he helps the team win, great. I'd love to see it. But right now, the way they're playing, like you said, unless he's working that pick and roll and finding guys and contributing in that way, then he's useless. And I've got no emotional connection to the guy. He seems like a nice guy. It'd be great to have everybody on the team contribute and the Celtics win. But if he's the odd man out, so be it. It doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah, I've kind of gone from, like, he could help the first unit because of his passing to, oh, he didn't help the first unit at all. And I think he's looked better against bench big men because he's no longer getting swatted by Nerlens Noel and Tim Duncan and guys like that.
Right.
But at the same time, why not just give those minutes to Zeller? Like, he's...
You could, absolutely.
And I don't know. I would do that. But... And Zeller's a better shooter. He's a better mid-range shooter than David Lee. Like, I don't know. So there's... I think David Lee has become... Out of any of the guys in the rotation, he's right now the biggest issue.
Yeah.
No matter how much beef you have with Evan Turner.
I can tolerate Evan Turner if he's being used the right way, and that's fine. I just get so flustered when I talk about Turner.
I didn't mean to get you started. Many apologies for bringing him up.
Last night he played great, but he was also, I mean, he was on fire. And look, if he still dribbles too much for my liking and still tries to, you know, dribble, create his own shot. Last night they fell. And great. He was huge and it was very important and it worked and whatever. That's fine. But anyway, we're going to move on. So let us discuss this defense, because it's something that you brought up. The Celtics have the sixth best defensive rating in the NBA. And I'm going to call up the stats here real quick. Their defensive rating right now is 95.2. Better than, let's see, the top five. Wait, we got Utah.
And the top five is all like defensive powerhouses. Yes. Like, this isn't
Utah,
a fluke stat.
Yes. So it's Utah, Golden State, Detroit, San Antonio, Cleveland, then Boston. So
yeah,
that's no joke. I mean, it's early again. Sample
and
size.
Cleveland
blah, blah,
being
blah,
up
blah.
There is scary, by the way. If Cleveland defends that well all year, they're going to be scary good.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah.
I think the scariest thing, honestly, is the Golden State Warriors. The
fact yeah, I mean, they're
their net rating is 21. Their offensive rating is 113.5.
They're stupid good. They are the best offensive team, the best defensive team. They have Stephen Curry, who right now is playing at a level that we have rarely seen in the entire NBA history. He is stupid good right now.
I can't stop watching. Like, when Steph Curry is out there doing his thing, I just it's like I get tingles just watching. Like, oh my God, because he makes it look so easy. He makes it look so easy. It's not like when you watch Russell Westbrook play, he's like a monster. He's just fierce.
Yeah.
It looks like his whole body's going to fall apart after a dunk. But when Steph Curry does his things, it's just like, boop, whatever. Oh, look at that. I just, you know, dribbled between my legs, between four guys, and whipped behind the back pass to somebody for a dunk. No big deal. Whatever.
Yeah. He's... I mean, he is the type. He is what every kid dreams of becoming. Like, when you're a kid, you dream of, like, just having the ultimate freedom, like, dribbling between your legs and around your back and around guy, and then pulling up from 30 feet and draining it. And, I mean, he is everything you want. I mean, he is just unbelievable. Yeah. And the Warriors are just unbelievable. They defend. They share the ball. They are so fun to watch. But we're not here to talk about them. We're here to talk about the Celtics, who, again, are the sixth-ranked defense.
Yes.
And this isn't a fluke. This is after being the ninth-ranked defense after the All-Star break last year. Mm-hmm. So it's not a fluke. Like, they are quietly, because very few people talk about it, they are becoming a defensive powerhouse, an elite defensive team. And they're forcing turnovers. They are utilizing the Crowder-Bradley Smart trio as well as they can. Amir Johnson helps matters. I mean, right now they're leading the league in forced turnover percentage, which is awesome, obviously. And they convert those into fast break points at the other end. And so for as bad as the offense has been for most of the five games, that defense is very good. And they did it with David Lee starting three games.
Yeah.
So you know the rest of the defense is just very, very good.
Yeah, and that's something that at least is going the way we had hoped, because we were hoping for a top 10 defense this year. And so far, so good. But this is going to be how the Celtics score a lot of their points, because they're not a dynamic scoring team. They're going to have to defend and get points off of turnovers. That's how they're going to get to 100 points a game, if they get to 100 points a game, you know. But that's it. I mean, that you're not looking at a team full of knock 'em dead jump shooters like the aforementioned Golden State Warriors. They're not going to go out there and just be as hot as they were last night, where guys are, you know, like Evan Turner are hitting 60% of their shots. That's just not going to happen. We don't have shooters like that on this team. So you score with your defense. And they have been doing that. I will say, and a lot of times what I've noticed this season is the Celtics will turn the ball over and then immediately just go get the ball back.
Yeah, it's like all of a sudden Jay Crowder's like in a passing lane, stealing it and going in for a layup.
Yeah, it's like they screw up on offense, and it's like, all of a sudden, they just ramp up their defense and go back and just give me that back and let's go back this other way. It's so funny. It's like the other team intercepting the ball and then the offense like tackling them and just forcing a fumble and picking it back up and going the other way with it again. So it's a weird way for them to score, but that's how they're going to do it. So look, if you throw Amir Johnson into the starting lineup, and if Sullinger keeps playing defense, you know, an improved level of defense, then this should continue. And then, you know, the second unit will find ways to – you'll have to find ways to get stops with Isaiah Thomas and, you know, Olynyk and Jerebko, who aren't exactly tearing up the world defensively. So – but that's kind of been the formula for this team. We've said it from the beginning. The starters are supposed to go out and just hold the fort. Take the punishment, play the D, score off of the turnovers, and then the bench comes in and starts scoring all of the points, because that's where your scoring is coming from. So that's fine with me. If this continues, then you start now getting some of those rotations more solidified. You start David Lee. You start phasing out David Lee. You figure out the whole Zeller, Jerebko minutes distribution thing. Now we're starting to figure it out. So look, it's only the first full week of November, and people want to, you know, in the moment everybody wants to go, oh my god, this is terrible, I thought they were going to win 47 games, how is that going to be possible now? Well, you know, we'll forget about all this come February. You know, we'll just say, oh, yeah, remember we had a little tough start and, we couldn't quite figure out the rotations. Well, here we are, and things have started to pick up. And then also the schedule eases up in December and beyond. There are some tough teams on the schedule right now. So I'm actually, having talked all of this out, I'm feeling a lot better about where this is going. Stevens is starting to figure out his rotations. The defense is playing well. Certain guys are starting to get phased out, and that's just how it is. And we'll, I like where this is going.
Yeah, and I think it's a testament to him how quickly he was willing to make changes. Like, yeah. he went through all of preseason thinking that David Lee and Tyler Zeller should be the starting front court. And then 3 games later, he's like, no way. we are changing that. And not only were we changing that, we are overhauling this whole thing because we need to.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the danger of having so much depth and so many guys is that those decisions were not easy. And Steven seems to be figuring it out very quickly. And obviously things can change, things will change. But I think it's comforting to note that he's already gone back to the formula that he used last year. You know, that made them good. Like, that's the proven formula, is going small with the second unit and going skilled with the second unit. And it didn't take him long at all to realize, you know what, we have a lot of big guys, shove them aside, doesn't matter, they're going to sit on the bench because this is the best way for us to win.
Yep.
And I think, you know, we'll see if people get disgruntled, because there are going to be some guys like Tyler Zeller who's not playing as many minutes. I mean, he's still a solid big man. Like, he did not get magically worse from last year to now. He is still probably the best non-Amir Johnson rim protector on the team. He's an efficient scorer. Like, he has his strengths.
Yeah.
But it's just he doesn't fit into the formula like some other guys do. So
he'll get his chances. He'll get his chances.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's like you're saying, he's outside right now. He's where Sullinger was. But look at what Sullinger did. He's still pretty good. But it's a testament to – it really is a testament to how good a coach Brad Stevens is, because he's not afraid to say, I want to do this. Oh, it's not working. I'm going to do something else. Like, he made his decision, and then it didn't work, and he changed his mind. And, you know, a lot of people are stubborn, and that's – a bad coach is a guy who's stubborn, who says, I know this is going to work, and we're going to keep doing it. And Stevens immediately is like, whoa – this is terrible. Let's not do this anymore. So it's pretty good. One thing Stevens has done is gone to some of the rookies, and we've seen a lot of Rozier, not a lot, but we've seen Rozier in some key spots, you know, not at the end of games all the time. We saw in a couple of games, Rozier came in early and I thought played pretty well.
Yeah, I think his defense has been pretty good. He uses his athleticism at that end. I think at times he's over-dribbled. He doesn't always seem to know exactly what he's doing from a point guard standpoint. He was too afraid against the Wizards, so that's not ideal. But every once in a while, like, he had one pass where he drove the left side of the lane and threw, like, a jump pass to the opposite corner to Jonas Jerebko.
Yeah.
And those are the moments when you're like, okay, like, this guy has a lot of potential as a point guard because he's super athletic. And if he can see the court like that, which he can in flashes, then you really respect the type of potential he has when you see moments like that. So I think he's done a good job. He hasn't at all looked poor. I thought RJ Hunter was solid against Indiana in his only stint of actual minutes so far. He played at the end of the Washington game, but that was already a blowout. So I think all three of the rookies, you know, they've shown flashes. Obviously, they haven't gotten a lot of playing time and won't unless there are injuries. But all good things from those guys so far. I think all of them have shown that they're capable at the NBA level. And now it's just developing and working on their deficiencies, which, you know, we've seen some of those too.
Yeah, I think, you know, you get to a point where they're going to have to probably all go to Maine at some point and play and work on things. But I was, you know, like you said, the Rozier had some nice plays. you know, when you're looking at these rookies and you know that they're not going to play much, but kind of forced into playing a little bit, you saw some things that made you feel good. The Hunter's first basket is a hell of a first basket for his, you know, they drew up the play. He rejected the double screen. He read the defense, flashed to the corner. Isaiah Thomas made a great pass. And I thought it was a three, but he was just inside the line. But that was a really smart play to read that and figure it out and for everybody to be on the same page and for him to hit that shot. It was a tough shot. That's the type of stuff that you look at and you say, wow, if he's doing that now, then when he figures it all out and he starts to do that on a regular basis in a year or two, that's going to be pretty good. Like, I'm encouraged by that. And I tell you, Rozier does not give up on anything. That guy just keeps on going. He has like 5 rebounds. It's just probably all his own misses, but it just shows that he's really active going out and getting the ball. You know, he missed, he just goes and rips the ball out of everybody's hands and maintains possession. So some good stuff there. I'm encouraged by that. But also I think it shows that they're not going to be ready to contribute all that much, but if they're forced into service, it's not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah. And I think Hunter, especially because of his shooting, could get a chance at some point. Obviously they need more shooters. They don't have a lot of that. And if he can knock down shots and be a serviceable defender, which he has been, then at some point he could threaten to join the rotation. I don't know when that point is. I don't know what it'll take, but I think of all those guys, he's kind of knocking on the door the most, just because he is a good shooter. RJ Hunter coming soon to rotation near you, potentially.
That's my guy. Okay. So let's revel in the pain of the Brooklyn Nets for a bit.
Yes. Yes. Let's do that.
So a couple of tweets to get to here. Ryan Gillenwater asks, when do the Nets get their first win and do you pity their fan base? And another one, comes from, Michael Nye, who says, what's the best hashtag for next year's Nets pick? Is it hashtag Celtics pick, Billy King pick, or unprotected pick?
I like unprotected.
You like the unprotected pick? I like
because
that.
Because that's just a twist in the knife a little bit.
Yes. Because I still see tweets from some of the Nets bloggers and the Nets writers responding to people who seem to be like desperately hanging on to some potential future. They're asking, wait, do we still have the pick if we're like 1 through 3? No, you don't. Hashtag unprotected pick. So the question is, when do the Nets get their first win? And do you pity their fan base? No, I don't pity their fan base. Whatever. We all go through it.
I kind of pity their fan base. Because when the Celtics went through it, at least they had like draft picks and hope. And what is there to hope for with the Nets?
There is no hope in Brooklyn.
They have no promising young guys. They have no veterans who are like becoming established. I mean, I guess Rondae Hollis-Jefferson has a little promise as a young guy.
Yeah.
But for the most part, that is just a hopeless
you're
roster.
Pinning your hopes, you're sitting there like, oh, great. Well, don't worry. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is here.
Yeah. No. I mean, they're now 0-6.
Yeah.
They have, I believe, the second worst net rating in the league behind only the New Orleans Pelicans, who have been decimated by injuries and have also played the Warriors twice.
Yes. That is correct.
And the Nets just lost to the Lakers.
Yes.
Who are awful themselves.
Yes.
And the Nets have a vicious opening schedule, so that they might lose their next 10 or 12 games. I don't think they'll be favored in any game for their next like 10 or 12 games.
Let's just look at it right here. I have the schedule right now. Milwaukee Bucks at Milwaukee. No. That's a loss. At Houston. No. At Sacramento. No. At Golden State. No. Then Home to Atlanta, no. At Charlotte, yeah, maybe. Maybe.
Probably not.
Probably not, but maybe. Then a home and home with the your Boston Celtics. Better not. Better not. they better come in there over and leave over. And then Oklahoma City and Cleveland.
I mean, that's a vicious
Detroit.
Schedule. They're done. They're and then by the time that's done, whatever record they have at that point, whether it's one wins, two wins, three wins, at that point, they're going to be just broken.
The first legit chance I think they have to win a game is Thursday, December 10th, when the 76ers come to Brooklyn. That's the first chance that I think they legitimately win. Every other game, they may win a game before that. But,
mark it down. A month and 3 days from now, the Brooklyn Nets will get their first win.
Yeah. That's the first legit chance. Now, another team might come in and overlook them and look past them, and they might sneak something, and who knows. But that would be an upset. The first chance, the first game they may be favored in is that Philly game.
Yeah, I mean, God bless Danny Ainge for getting that pick.
God.
Those three picks, it's not just this year, it's next year and the following
year. 3 years in a row.
Which is, I mean, we talk about this basically every podcast now, but the Nets, their outlook keeps looking worse. It's like every time we speak about this, they look worse and worse and worse. Right now, they have the worst offense in the league and the 26th ranked defense. They currently have 14 fewer threes than Stephen Curry by himself.
I love this so much. Oh, God. I love this so much.
I saw a stat today. The Nets have one player who is shooting better than 30% from three-point range.
Get out.
And it's Andrea Bargnani, who is 1-for-3. 1-for-3. That is their lone 30% three-point shooter.
Oh, God. You know you're bad when Bargnani leads you in anything that's supposed to be positive. That's bad.
Yeah, they're I mean, that's going to – I don't think right now I mean, it's a huge stretch of the imagination to think that won't be a top-five pick.
That would – no.
It has to be a top-five pick, right?
It has to be. There's – in what scenario would that not be a top-five pick?
I mean, it's already to the point where I'm, like, starting to track Ben Simmons and how he does in college because I figure he might be coming to the Celtics next year. Now, obviously, it's a little too early for that.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it is. Like, there is a legitimate chance the Celtics come away with, like, a top-three pick and are a playoff team and maybe get the Mavericks lottery pick. And we talk about this every podcast, but it's just a wonderful place to be. Like, they are already competitive, and their star might be coming in the draft. their next star.
That's amazing. This is very reminiscent of the Red Auerbach, you know, have a good team, but somehow secure a good draft pick. You know, it's just ridiculous how well this has worked out. I mean, I can't, this is almost like, if possible, beyond the best case scenario. It's not even the best case scenario. It's better than the best case scenario, because I didn't think the Celtics were going to be this good at this point. So I'm trying to call up, cause Chuck put a morning dump together the other day that had all of the potential picks here. So if things go well, the Celtics could have the first pick in the draft via Brooklyn, and then the 10th pick in the draft via
themselves.
Okay. And then the 14th pick in the draft via Dallas.
And yeah. Right now, Tankathon.com has this. They are first, 10th, and 11th, and then not 12th, because Minnesota, I think that's top 12 protected. But like Minnesota, I don't think that one will be conveyed. But they could have two lottery picks and their own pick. And I mean, it's just crazy. It's nuts. It really is. Like, and Brooklyn's healthy right now. Like, they haven't even met the inevitable Brook Lopez injury or like Joe Johnson. Like, they're right now, they're fully healthy and just atrocious. And it's not going to get much better over there. It's only going to get worse. Lionel Hollins is talking about, we're moving forward, guys. It may not seem like it because we're losing all the time, but we're moving forward. And meanwhile, they're losing to the Lakers at home with 16,000 of their 17,000 fans chanting for Kobe Bryant.
Yeah. It's a really horrible situation. They can't draft anybody. I mean, they can't trade anybody. They got nothing to do with the draft. They don't have young players. There's literally nothing to be happy about with the Brooklyn Nets if you're a fan of the Nets.
Yeah, I get the feeling that Celtics fans are almost more happy about the Nets.
Oh, yes.
Than they are about anything that happens with the Celtics,
because
it's like they just get giddy looking at what's going on with the Nets, because they are just spiraling downward.
That makes this season completely free of worry. That conversation that we were having last year about they should not be winning these games, that goes out the window. Nothing matters. The win total this year, it doesn't matter at all. Because what's the worst case scenario? Somehow they continue to suck. All right, so if the Celtics somehow continue to suck and they end up with a 30-win team, whatever, then, you know, they get a pretty decent draft pick out of that. Whatever. We'll figure it out. But they still got the Nets' top three pick. And if the Celtics magically go off and win 55 games, doesn't matter, because even if you sit there and say, well, half these guys aren't going to be here next year, doesn't matter, because we're still – it doesn't affect our draft position at all. Brooklyn has done us the favor. They are tanking by proxy. So, done. Thank you. Do you thank Danny Ainge more, or do you thank Billy King more? I mean, Danny Ainge asked, but Billy King had to say, okay, sure, no problem. I mean, if I see Billy King walking down the street, I'm buying that man a drink.
I mean, you should buy him like 7 or 8 and then – get him drunk enough to forget the Nets problems, man. Do him a favor and get him real drunk, because he does not want to be thinking about that team. He does not want to be thinking about that future. Oh. And
okay. I don't want to get too happy about this, because I just want to enjoy it. Enjoy it and take whatever comes, whatever player, and I don't want to get too giddy about it, because it's a long season. We're gonna have a lot of time. Let's just run through some of these other tweets. Alex asked, how do you think Steven handles Smart's return? Could get bad if he sits Isaiah Thomas in the starter struggle. We kind of addressed that already. But just to recap, I think Smart, I don't think there's any real issue with Thomas sitting. He also asked, should Steven still be playing 12 guys plus a night, or should we have a tight rotation by now? Kind of address that. I like where we're going with that. And then B asks, Amir Johnson has finishing issues around the basket, or did it just seem that way? This is from the San Antonio game, I believe. Do you have any concerns about Amir Johnson finishing around the basket?
No, mostly because he's been good with Isaiah Thomas in the pick and roll, which is where they really need him to be good. He's not going to take a lot of shots. Like, he's not an offensive player. He's more of a defensive minded guy. He'll pick his spots offensively and he'll be fine when he does. I think he's the least of the worries.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just a solid guy. No matter what, he's going to give you solid defense, and whatever offense he gives you is a bonus.
Okay, I think that covers it, my friends. The Celtics are off until Tuesday, and then they play a back-to-back, so they got the Bucks and the Pacers, revenge game against the Pacers. and then they go Friday against the Hawks, and then Sunday at Oklahoma City. So by the time we record again, we'll probably record before the Oklahoma City Thunder game. So we will be talking about the Bucks, Pacers, and Hawks. I think the Celtics can take two of those three games, at least.
Yeah, I mean, as long as they're still playing well, which I think because they're starting to figure out the rotations, they will start to string together some better games. But Atlanta, Oklahoma City, and then Houston, that's a tough three-game stretch.
Yes.
Especially with the Oklahoma City, Houston back-to-back. Like, that's tough.
That's going to be
so. Yeah. Schedule's getting a little tougher, although they've already played some tough teams. I mean, the NBA there's not a lot of teams that are easy wins.
No. Not for this team.
Especially not for this team. Definitely not for this team. And especially at this stage of the season where they haven't figured everything out yet. Yeah. So, we'll see. Celtics finally victorious by a lot.
Yes.
Finally got some shots to fall. And the hope is high. Sullinger, MVP candidate.
Olynyk,
sixth man of the year.
Fighting with Isaiah Thomas.
Yes, those two battling it out, duking it out, while Tyler Zeller sits in tears, a puddle of tears at the end of the bench.
Oh, poor Tyler. You know, yeah. I'm telling you, Tyler Zeller is going to somehow against like Indiana go out there and drop like 15 and 10. It's something like that's going to happen. And in a week, we're going to completely throw out everything that we said in this show. But yeah. All right, start over again.
That's just what we do. Like, we discuss a set of things 1 week, and then by the next week, it's completely obsolete. And that's just how the Celtics are. That's how they're going to be. And so by next week, it'll probably be some completely different issues. Probably maybe a completely different group of starters. We might be discussing Sullinger's struggles. And
seriously.
You never know. And, yeah.
David Lee, one player of the week. Now we're getting crazy.
Yeah, now we're really getting crazy. All right, it might be time to end.
I think David Lee, player of the week. That's a good place to stop. We will see you guys all again next week on the Rain and Jays podcast.